And it will be very hard for President Obama to complain about violent extremist attacks that attack Paris and Brussels, even Ankara, when our weapons and our military personnel are assisting Saudi Arabia commit terrible attacks on Saudi schools and Saudi hospitals. That's going to come back to us. To the U.S. government, we have an open question. What are you targeting? Tell the American people what you are targeting in Yemen.
We're going to leave it there. And I thank you so much for being with us. Sarah Lee Whitson is Executive Director of Human Rights Watch's Middle East and North Africa Division. We'll link to her piece in the Los Angeles Times. The U.S. is quietly helping Saudi Arabia wage a devastating aerial campaign in Yemen. And thanks so much to Fariel Muslimi, speaking to us from Beirut, Lebanon, visiting scholar at the Carnegie Middle East Center there in Beirut and co-founder of the Sana Center for Strategic Studies. That does it for our show. The Democracy Now! 20th anniversary tour begins next week. I'll be in Ithaca on April 6th. Columbus, Ohio on the 8th, St. Louis and Columbia, Missouri and Kansas City on the 9th, Los Angeles and Santa Barbara on the 10th. And the 100-city tour continues from there. Check our website at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Has two job openings. Check our website. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. We're going to have a great show for you today. April Fool. Yeah. No, it's always a pretty good show. I mean, it goes up and down. I'm joined in the studio today back from a little, it was John Conroy, our WHFR news director, always is doing so many things in the community, and he was singing in a couple of choirs. But you've been also fighting a little cold, too, for the last week or so and feeling under the weather, and rightly so in Michigan. It's cold again, darn it. But welcome back.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Jay. It's good to be back.
Mm-hmm. Good to be anywhere. That's what I say.
Oh, yes.
Right. So just like I like to do, just to remind people about these holidays, what should you do? Should you just play jokes and tricks on people today? I don't recommend that, folks. In fact, I always hated that when I was young, that other kids in school would play jokes on me. So because I was bullied, I guess, is that called bullying if people play jokes on you? And so on. Here's the background from history.com, and they should know something about it, huh? On this day in 1700, English pranksters began popularizing the annual tradition of April Fool's Day by playing practical jokes on each other. Although the day, also called All Fools' Day, has been celebrated for several centuries by different cultures, its exact origins remain a mystery. Mm-hmm. Some historians speculate that April Fool's Day dates back to 1582, when France switched from the Julian calendar to the Gregorian calendar, which we're trying to use these days, as called for by the Council of Trent in 1563. It took them 19 years to put it in place. Anyway, people who were slow to get the news or failed to recognize that the start of the new year had moved to January 1st and continued to celebrate it during the last week of March through April 1st became the butt of jokes and hoaxes. These included having paper fish placed on their backs and being referred to as poisson d'avril, which means April fish, said to symbolize a young, easily caught fish and a gullible person. Historians have also linked April Fool's Day to ancient festivals such as Hilaria. I bet that was hilarious. That's where the word came from. Which was celebrated in Rome at the end of March and involved people dressing up in disguises. Sort of like our Halloween, I guess, but this is in end of March. There's also speculation that April Fool's Day was tied to the vernal equinox, or first day of spring in the Northern Hemisphere, which is usually the 21st, 22nd of March, when Mother Nature fooled people with changing, unpredictable weather. Well, That's every day of the year in Michigan, though. So, and anyway, April Fool's Day spread throughout Britain during the 18th century. In Scotland, the tradition became a two-day event. A lot of fools, I guess, there. I'm sorry. A lot of practical jokes were planned. Anyway, in Scotland, that two-day event started with hunting the gowk, that's G-O-W-K, in which people were sent on phony errands. Gowk is a word for cuckoo bird, a symbol for fool. I've never seen a cuckoo bird. I wonder what that looks like, if there is one, or if it's like being out on a tripe hunt in the forest. There's no such thing as tripe, you know.
No, but kookaburra sits on the old gum tree.
You heard about that one?
Yeah.
Huh? Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. And anyway, the second day of that Scottish festival in the 18th century was followed by Taily Day. That's T-A-I-L-I-E, Taily Day, which involved pranks played on people's derrieres, such as pinning fake tails or kick me signs on them.
Nice.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, right, thanks. In modern times, people have gone to great lengths to create elaborate April Fool's hoaxes. Newspapers, radio, and TV stations and websites have participated in the April 1st tradition of reporting outrageous fictional claims that have fooled their audiences. In 1957, the BBC reported that Swiss farmers were experiencing a record spaghetti crop and showed footage of people harvesting noodles from trees. Numerous viewers were fooled. Hey, if you see it on TV, it must be true.
Must be real.
Yeah. Mm. In 1985, Sports Illustrated tricked many of its readers when it ran a made-up article about a rookie pitcher named Sid Finch who could throw a fastball over 168 miles an hour. Hey, with steroids, it wouldn't be a problem, I don't think, today. Anyway, in 1996, Taco Bell, the fast food restaurant chain, duped people when it announced it had agreed to purchase Philadelphia's Liberty Bell and intended to rename it the Taco Liberty Bell. I remember that. That was actually, they actually ran a TV commercial.
Yep.
No, it was false, of course. In 1998, after Burger King advertised a left-handed Whopper, scores of clueless customers requested the fake sandwich. Again, people will believe almost anything on TV, and that you shouldn't do that. And I think on the internet too, it's also true. Also, you might tend to believe anything spoken by a presidential candidate, and that's not such a good idea either. You know, the fact checking is they're doing a lot of work, those fact checkers, let me tell you, because there's a lot of statements that just aren't true that we're being told, and we kind of believe them. I have to give credit to, I often mention a lot of my sources, and I don't have a specific story from them today, but Arab American News does have a story on their website, which might be in their edition that comes out every Saturday for free. Find it, somewhere in Dearborn. It's usually copies at the center, the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, and also at other locations. But you can go to their website, ArabAmericanNews.com, and see it. And the one story I thought was interesting is it was actually a story done on Arab Americans who support Trump. Hmm. And that boggles the mind, okay, right there, especially because of the various things Trump has said in general about Muslims, Islam in general, and Muslims in the U.S., and, of course, keeping any other Muslims out. A couple of them did say that the media reported his statements in a too general a way, is that Trump never said that all Muslims should be not allowed to enter the country, but only those from certain areas or countries or whatever. Well, I'm not sure what he said where, because he makes a lot of speeches and he's covered a lot. And whether it was, sometimes he tries to modify his positions on TV talk shows or news shows of any significance. But otherwise, in person, to the crowds, he just kind of says almost anything, and because there's nobody around to fact check him right away or cut away those people, it's a captive audience sitting there in that room, so we're still having all of that fun. But I thought the reason I mentioned that is because it's good to know about all the points of view, even if it's from a minority, and especially in the group that the Arab American newspaper primarily writes for, which is the Arabs, Arab Americans in this area, and nationally for that matter. The newspaper also covers national topics as well as community topics. But there are some people, like one Arab American woman, and this is not stereotyping all, certainly, because again, this is a minority point of view story. But she said, I like Trump because he'll protect us from ISIS. You know, we need a leader, a president of the United States that will scare everybody else. Yeah, I personally have to disagree with that opinion, and so I have my opinions, and of course, all opinions on the show.
Are all the opinions on the show are expressed by the hosts are not necessarily the opinions of WHFR and Henry Ford College.
That's right. But here we go anyway. And so, you know, I think that a real carpet bombing president, as Ted Cruz has said he wants to do to the Middle East, just carpet bomb it. That means bomb every inch. Pretty much wipe everybody out. You know, innocents, it doesn't matter if they're innocent, they're young, they're old, they're kids, you know, women, doesn't matter, just carpet bomb them. Well, yeah, you know, so a president saying things like that, and that's a Ted Cruz statement, not a Donald Trump statement, although Trump has said things in general about, you know, eliminating Muslim populations in Europe and the Middle East that are not really very friendly to innocent people. Nonetheless, I think that's a recruiting tool when a president might say that sort of thing for more people to join ISIS in those countries. And even
spurs them on more. Yep.
Even some young people in this country might want to defend people, whether it's religious reasons or ethnic reasons or whatever, because the president is such a, in this case, in the future, perhaps, is such a crazed fanatic in terms of violence only, never negotiate, never understand, never have compassion, and don't worry about the collateral damage, as they call it. I mean, that kind of president, that'll get a lot of people recruited for a number of reasons to do terrible things back to us, either overseas or in this country. And so I don't think that's the approach, my personal opinion. I think I mentioned on the show last week that Larry Wilmore on his show, The Nightly, which is on Comedy Central, and it's a comedy, it's a satire of politics today, especially from the African-American point of view, choosing their stories that way. And he actually did a 10-minute segment like a week or so ago with what would be called a focus group of African-Americans, older, younger, obviously pre-selected. He had only about a dozen. And the question was, why do you support Donald Trump? Because all these people said they did. And, of course, he didn't react during the presentation because he wanted them to speak as openly and fully as possible. So he did a commendable journalist job there. But, of course, back in the studio, that was a pre-recorded segment, back in the studio, you know, he's crying, he's holding his head under the table, he's banging his head on the desk, I think. I mean, it just, he is giving his opinion, therefore, that these are pretty crazy opinions, because there really wouldn't be any improvement for African Americans in general or civil rights in general, he feels, under a Trump presidency. And yet you have all these African Americans, most of which are, I mean, young, older, and pretty intelligent. I mean, at least they're articulate. They're, you know, they're not talking like a person without some education. And giving some reasons that they thought were valid. Of course, yours truly didn't think they were any more than Larry Wilmore, but I didn't bang my head on the TV screen, you know, afterwards. I can't laugh. You can't laugh at that stuff with somebody that seems so different from your opinion, who seems to have ideas that, you know, they can't believe that. Just, and that's politics, of course, in America. Even in the 1950s when I was growing up, and I only was aware of like the Democrats and the Republicans, two main parties, and some differences. My parents were basically in favor of the Democratic candidates because my dad was, in a labor union, worked in Chrysler Corporation, UAW. And so we favored the party that favored labor unions and negotiations between employer and employees and so on. I couldn't believe when I went to school then, and, you know, like 10, 12, 14, that so many other kids were so crazy because they were Republican. They liked Ike, General Dwight Eisenhower. And you know, so you can't, what did they say, you can never get resolution on conversations about religion and politics.
Right, right.
You know, and don't even try to argue on those two topics. Because generally you can't find, even if you find some facts, some verifiable truths to support your arguments, the other people, and sort of like the faith that some people believe in their religion, which is fine as long as they don't, that doesn't get you in trouble. But if it's based on faith, then facts can't interfere. By definition, facts cannot interfere with faith because faith trumps, pardon that expression, facts. And that's an interesting problem there. Although I think most decisions should be made on the basis of facts. Science, if you want to call it that, too. Logic. Ooh, logic. Ooh, there's another big word.
There's a good one. Yep.
Well, it's not that big, five letters, but it's very important. Fact is four-letter word. Pretty simple. And logic is a five-letter word. Okay. We got that clear. Well, back to the news. Got a couple of stories from last week.
Just want to make...
Yeah, go, John.
Yeah, one more comment about April Fool's Day.
Uh-huh.
I was going to ask you, Jay, do you think that the Beatles were talking about Capitol Hill when they did Fools on the Hill?
Oh. That was just Fool on the Hill, but still.
Fool on the Hill, yeah, sorry.
That's all right. Okay, I groaned. All right. Moving on. Well, last week, we've been talking about the 19th District Court race, and a lot of candidates are announcing for some of the offices that will be up for grabs, if you will, in the elections, both the primary election coming up in August. If there's multiple candidates for the Democratic and Republican Party, that will be, you know, that will be the first election you need to go to if you want to reduce the candidates to the ones that you think are best. And again, like most primaries in Michigan, you can only vote in one party for one party or the other. You can't vote for some and then vote, you know, on both sides. Okay. Still, I brought up that District Judge William Holmgren was not running for another term. And I didn't know quite why, other than maybe retiring with a lot of money from his legal suit that his wife, the woman that he married several years ago, just a few years ago, she had just won a huge settlement, over $1 million, from somebody, either the city government or state government or 19th District Judge Mark Summers. Well, it turned out that was wrong, and if you didn't hear my correction last week, he's not term limited, he's age limited. So I don't know if it's 70 or 75 or what, but there is a age limitation on how old you can be as a judge. That is that to protect the bench from senility? You know, obviously the U.S. Supreme Court, those people can be as old as they can get. There's no age limitation on people at the U.S. Supreme Court level. Well, here's a story. Came out last Sunday as if somebody was listening to the show and said, we better tell Jay what's really going on here. But no, it was a ruling just came about who should pay this settlement because of, you know, the woman was fired from her job at the 19th District Court by the administrator of the court who was appointed by the city of Dearborn to administer it and make decisions like staffing. And Judge Mark Summers felt that her position wasn't needed, and they could save some money. He was under a lot of pressure, by the way, from the Dearborn City Council. They had several meetings. Why don't you save more money? Why don't you give fines that are higher? And why don't you, you know, what are all these people doing? And yet, his argument didn't hold up because somebody heard him say, off the record, I think, you know, that he felt it was wrong for a sitting judge, Judge Holmgren, to be dating this woman who's the administrator, and in fact not just dating, but she was living with him at that time. Oh. So that close relationship might, I don't know, be unfair to some clients coming in.
Might taint the dealings of the court.
Well, you know, so, you know. A little bit, and yep. and And also, it seems that, oh my gosh, even though it's a majority of people in the U.S. that say that they're Christian, he lets people know he's a Christian. He's practicing Christian. And that kind of premarital sex, if you want to call it that, he's not in favor of. So he didn't like that. So the juries, and it went to juries,
right,
several times in several appeals. I think the higher appeals were just single judges. But they took all that into account and said, well, he fired her because of his personal opinions. But I thought he had a great case. I wasn't in the trial. I didn't see all the evidence on both sides. I thought he had a great case for the fact that he was eliminating someone whose position wasn't, he felt, absolutely needed. Well, okay, that... So Julie Pucci, now Julie Holmgren, if she changed her name, I assume she did, since she married Judge Holmgren, would get more than $700,000 in damages and $400,000 in legal fees, because Holmgren was paying her legal fees, so it'd be nice if he gets paid back there someday, and yet has not gotten their judgment. They've gotten no money. So along with interest, which they charge, it's about $1.2 million. And so in a ruling last week, the Michigan Appellate Court, that's not the Supreme Court, but one step down, said that Pucci cannot collect any of the damages awarded from the 19th District Court because the verdict was against Summers as a person, not in his official capacity. Although, duh, in my mind, that was his job. He was acting, because nobody can fire somebody at the 19th District Court unless they are the administrative chief there, as appointed by the city. So he couldn't have been acting in it as a person, because he couldn't fire her then. He wouldn't have the authority to fire her.
But bias was built in, is what the court said.
Well, I think so. That's what I can only guess here.
Yep.
So what's interesting is that he's going to have to pay the whole $1.2 million himself, although it looks like it's going to be appealed, this ruling, and get this one. It's going to go to the Michigan Supreme Court, and you say, well, that's because he needs to do it so he didn't get stuck with that.
Yeah.
Well, here's the full story. I thought this was interesting just to figure up here. Just so you know, Mark Summer, even though Julie Pucci hasn't got any of the money, okay, Summer's wages have been garnished to make sure she's getting the judgment money, 25% of his annual pay. And I think he gets about $138,000 a year as a judge. So a fourth of that is going to her anyway. So part of it is really being paid, because he's, I don't know for how many years, a couple of years at least, of 25% of his pay is going to her. But how long would it take for her to get the whole $1.2 million?
It might take a little while.
Yeah, she may not live that long, you know, and Holmgren might not live that long if he's already age limited, and I don't know what age he is. But so Summers, of course, said he's not happy with the court decision because it changes statutory language. And he says, respectably, I disagree with the conclusion. I believe it's an error. Now, of course, the city of Dearborn is very pleased with the decision and had a statement that, thank God, we don't have to pay it. You know, basically, that's what they said. Well, that's crazy. They appointed him to be an administrative judge. They told him to save money. He decided that they didn't need that position. And yes, there might have been bias behind his decision to choose Julie Pucci, but I don't see how that makes any sense to me, that he should have to pay for it. Okay, it was his bias, but you can make an argument that bias, even though he had that bias, those biases,
yeah,
it didn't affect his decision.
Yeah.
I mean, prove that his biases affected his decision. I don't think you can prove that.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Supreme Court in Michigan is not required to hear the case if somebody takes it there, but Pucci's attorney, Joel Sklar, said that he would ask the Michigan Supreme Court to take the case. So, and you know why? Because if they rule that it's the city to pay it, then they're going to pay it up front. They're going to have to pay that $1.2 million. They'll have to take it out of their reserves. In other words, the city of Dearborn has got the money. It's in a reserve fund, of course, that which they need to save for the good of the city in emergencies, but they've got the money to pay it right now. So it's kind of ironic that Summers might get off the hook for all this money, On legal grounds, of course, but got to take it to the Supreme Court because the appellate court didn't find it. And but it's Pucci's attorney that's going to take it to the Supreme Court saying it should be the city, not Mark Summers, that needs to pay it. I love that. I think that's really ironic, but I love that turn of events. But the Supreme Court may decide not to hear it. However, Mark Summers hopes that it does, of course.
Of course.
That's what it says here.
The court costs and the attorney fees continue to go up and up and up.
Well, it's the interest on that, yeah. The original, you put it together, and, well, of course, any more legal fees would be right. added in, of course. Yeah,
yep.
right.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, oh boy, what a deal. Okay, so I just want to get that straight because I covered the story last couple weeks. I think I mentioned the City Council of Dearborn is considering smoking restrictions in neighborhood parks. That's been going on for about a year or two. They've been working together with community leaders, and a lot of people in the Arab American community like to take their hookahs to the parks and smoke them. And I don't know if that's a huge cloud of smoke or just very strong smoke, a lot of nicotine in the smoke, too.
A lot of stench.
Well, if you put it that way, that's his opinion, folks. Yeah. I've never actually smelled what a hookah smells like, but if it's the right kind of, or the worst kind of tobacco, it could have a very bad odor.
It has I think it's a worse odor than nicotine.
I remember when I was in France as a college student on a summer trip over there, academic trip. It was the first time we ever smelled people smoking the extremely strong Gauloises Bleu. Yeah, because it sort of turns anybody blue when they're in the vicinity of somebody smoking them. No, the package is the blue color.
Okay.
The French blue color, Gauloises Bleu. And it's unfiltered, and it's so strong. You think you're smoking a cigar. I never tried it. I was afraid to.
Yeah.
But it is so, so toxic. I don't even know if they still sell them because it was such a health hazard. But I can only imagine that, depending on the tobacco, even a hookah smoker could really... have a problem there. So they worked with the community. I think there's a good resolution here, and they're going to have a final vote on it this month about the rules. Basically, it's to sequester smokers, I think, in certain areas and prohibit them in mini parks with play equipment where kids might be.
Okay.
So I'm just saying that's, you know, a good democratic government at work there. There's an issue. There's a problem. You got to take into account some cultural issues and how the community uses their parks and so on. And I think they finally worked out some. It's taken about a year or so, but
well, there's also good. But there's no mention. I don't think about the blue cigarettes that are sold in stores now.
Is that the e-cigarettes?
E-cigarettes. There we go.
Well, the recent studies, John. And those are not regulated at all.
No, no,
in any way.
No.
And anybody can buy them, but the point is that the last study I read, national study, if not international study, is that the e-cigarettes are not really a health hazard. I don't quite understand that because there must be some nicotine involved.
There's some other substance involved.
There's other substance,
yeah.
So, I mean, I wouldn't recommend taking anything other than air. Air is bad enough in certain parts of the country. No names, no names of areas around here. But I recommend fresh air myself.
Yeah, yeah.
The ultimate high, fresh air. Okay. Dearborn Public Service Days will be in effect starting April 4th. That's Monday, running all the way through November 26th. An easy way to remember what to do is remember this motto, carts out. That's C-A-R-T-S. Carts out, cars in. That means that parked vehicles should be off the street on the day that residents set their trash and recycling carts at the curb. For example, if a neighborhood's trash day is Wednesday, the public service day is Wednesday. Duh. Okay, it's the same day as your trash day. Got that, folks? If the trash day is Thursday, the public service day is Thursday. Same pattern throughout the week. It's amazing they have to write these press releases and be that specific. But some they just don't get it. So when you set your trash out, make sure your car is not by the curb. Don't park it there. Park it in your driveway. The city of Dearborn has some other suggestions if you're in a neighborhood or you don't have a driveway.
Yeah.
Okay. They've got some other suggestions on what to do with your car. There are violations now. Okay, the first violation in a calendar year is $15 or $7 if paid within 3 days. So Pay that fine quick, folks. Second violation of calendar year is $30, and the third violation of calendar year is $70, and the fourth violation of calendar year, your vehicle will be towed at the owner's expense. And I think that cost $100 or $150 or something to get it back and pay for the towing. So keep your cars off the street when it's your trash day. So when you put your trash carts out, keep your cars in the garage, in the drive, off the curb. And by the way, if you got two cars and you got a short driveway, you're not supposed to have one car over the sidewalk. That breaks a law. That's a disability access law. You can't block the sidewalk in front of your house with your car or anything else for that matter. Okay? You'll get a ticket for that too. And now we have a new building and safety department. It's not called that anymore, but they just reorganized for like the fourth time in 5 years in the city of Dearborn. And so they have re-identified the needs, and they're going to go out and crack down on these neighborhood violations. So don't risk it there. Remember, public service days in Dearborn, they begin the week of April 4th. And what is that, by the way? Okay, it's when they clean the streets curb to curb and provide other important maintenance work. Like, I'd like them to fill some potholes in my neighborhood. They actually started last week. They put some asphalt down in two or three of the worst potholes, and there's only about 20,000 more that are don't have anything in them. So I guess they ran out of asphalt or something. Okay, we did that story. That's wonderful. These are ketchup stories, people. We don't have any mustard.
Or relish.
No, even though I relish a lot of this information. Okay, Tuesday at the Friends of the Dearborn Library, they're sponsoring a lecture. I often don't mention the Dearborn Public Library system that much, but there's always something happening at your friendly library.
Wow.
Yes, there is. In this case, at 7 p.m. Next Tuesday at the Henry Ford Centennial Library on Michigan Avenue. The lecture is going to be Petticoat Surgeon, The Extraordinary Life of Dr. Bertha Van Hoosen. Okay? In a society that had not yet accepted women's active participation in the medical field, the Van Hoosen women forged lives of compassion for others, adventure, and accomplishment against great odds. Ooh, so it's our historical story. A lot of people love those biographical real-life stories, and she's going to be there. Also, on April 6th, the Fold, the Friends of the Library of Dearborn, will hold its April book and media sale from 9:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. So that's next week, Thursday, isn't it? No, it's Wednesday.
Wednesday.
The day after the 5th is the Wednesday. So next Wednesday, 9:30 to 9 at the main library, the Henry Ford Centennial Library, the one that's got the war memorial that's going to be there eventually. It's all broken up now. It's in pieces, but you can park, free parking still behind the library. Actually, no, the front entrance, really, who needs it? Whoever goes in from the front entrance. Okay, somebody getting off a bus. I think there's a bus stop there, but very few people use it anyway. So, but the point is, book sale, and where do they get the books from? It's the extra part of the collection that they don't have room for. So a lot of good books of all types, and it'll help benefit the Friends of the Library of Dearborn, and very, very low prices, too, on books and vintage books, literature, magazines, religion, poetry, health and fitness books, all kinds of books. And that's next Wednesday, April 6th, from 9:30 to 6 at Henry Ford Centennial. Okay. Candidates coming out of the woodwork. I'm sorry, not exactly. As if they're, what, worms? No. Wonderful candidates are filing their petitions for a number of positions to be elected to, either, first of all, in the primary in August or in November. We now have a third candidate entering the race for district judge, 19th district judge. It's a man this time. The other two are women. Susan DeBaggia, current Dearborn City Council president, and Abby Bazzi. Abby is a woman also, also a lawyer. I guess you had to be a lawyer to be a judge. Oh, no, not Sarah Palin. She's pitched a TV show, sort of like a Judge Judy show that hasn't been picked up yet. But if it is, it'll maybe be on your friendly TV network 5 days a week next year. And she has no legal background. Okay, She didn't even serve a full term as governor. Okay. Okay, John McCain asked her to be his vice presidential nominee, a heartbeat away from the presidency. Oh, well. But certainly, attorney Gene Hunt has got the basic qualification, and he mentions that he's trying to bring a steady hand to the Dearborn District Court. He has 31 years of experience. He's probably the oldest candidate out of the three of them. I'm just guessing, though. And he's going to protect the constitutional rights of all the citizens and guarantee equal access to justice. So his doors are always open, I guess. They don't lock the court doors if he's going to be there. Anyway, Hunt attended William Ford, Woolworth School, Fortson High School, Henry Ford Community College, and the University of Michigan Dearborn, and then went to Wayne State University Law School. So he says he's a son of Dearborn through and through. He said, if Dearborn had a law school, I would have attended it too. The only time I didn't live in Dearborn was during the mid-70s when I joined the United States Marine Corps, name dropper. After my service to our country, I immediately moved back to Dearborn. And he and his wife, Carol, have been married for 33 years. The Hunts have two daughters and three grandchildren. And again, I don't think that information, my crazy personal opinion, I think a single person can be just as well qualified based on other criteria. And well, you got to understand family life and families. And tell that to the Catholic priests who give counseling about marriage. Yeah. You know, tell that to them, that they need to get married in order to understand their counseling. I don't think you have to if you're very well educated and responsible and ethical and moral. So I just don't think that information either about age or about your family is needed. I'm sorry. Just don't think about that. Anyway, welcome to the race, and yes, WHFR and this show, once we get all these candidates sorted out, we'll see if we can get some of them on the show before the primary. But I think we're going to have to wait for the primary to sort it down to a smaller number, and then we'll try to give 15 minutes of fame to candidates who are not incumbents. That's our usual rule. Mm-hmm. And on through the week before the election in November. And we'll do the best we can to get a couple of these candidates who you may not have known before, the background of. Gene Hunt is probably going to be on our list because they won't be a whittling down in the primary of the district court race, I don't think.
Next primary being May the 8th, or is that the?
No, the primary is in August.
August, okay.
Next August, yeah, it's August. But the question is, is there going to be a primary for 19th District Court to take it down to two candidates, or do they allow it to be the plurality of the three or four or five or whatever there is finally that gets the seat? I'll have to look into that, okay, by turning the page. Turn the page on the air. Mm-hmm. Continue on page A2. Oh, well, that's easy. All right. Right. Mm-hmm. It says... none of the candidates for the 19th District Judgeship are yet listed on the August primary ballot, according to the Michigan Secretary of State's office. So, yeah, I think they will bring down the three candidates to two then for 19th District Judge, even though it's not a Democrat-Republican thing. There'll be a nonpartisan part of the ballot in August. That's what it seems to be saying there. Okay. See anything else here? There's going to be town hall meetings. If you live in the Crestwood School District area, there is a bond, $35 million bond proposal, will be on a May 3rd ballot. That was the election John was thinking of there, but I think it's only for school issues this year anyway. And it's certainly there's one in Dearborn Heights, Crestwood. And the first meeting will be 7 p.m. April 11th. Let's see, it's a week from Monday, and the second will be 6 p.m. April 14th, 3 days later, at Kinlock Elementary School, and a third will be at 7 p.m. April 20th at Crestwood High School. So it'd be good if you go there in person and ask your questions, because it is $35 million, and don't just think, oh, I'm not going to vote for it, we don't need it. You need to find out all the details, if you're a resident over there, a taxpayer, about whether or not they really do need it and what they're spending it on. I think that's great, and it seems like they have three Three different venues over three different days and three different days of the week, so it should be fairly easy to attend one of those. Hope you can, folks, if you're in that area, because I'm not saying all millages or all bond proposal for schools are equally worthy, but in general, I'd say yes, because teacher that I am, I think any money is money well spent for education. There's a lot of people that oversee that, so it's not like there's auditors that come in. Oh my God, they come in here, check all of our equipment at WHFR, and where is this that you bought 2.5 years ago? My God, I don't know. I think it broke already. So we're a public institution. That's true. We're not based in Dearborn. We're not part of the Dearborn Public Schools per se. We're overseen by a separate Board of Trustees, who happens to be the same people who are also on the Board of Trustees, but in a different executive capacity, legally. So this is all public stuff, and any money that is collected, it has to be spent, and it has to be well spent, and you have to have the records. So I don't think any money going to the schools, certainly in Dearborn, you have anything to worry about, or Dearborn Heights. Okay. Volunteers are needed to help clean up Ecorse Creek. Oh, that sounds like a fun day. The annual spring cleanup is set for 9 a.m. April 23rd. The Dearborn Heights Watershed Stewards Commission is hosting the three-hour event that kicks off at Swapka Park near the Richard A. Young Center, McKinley Street. Okay, that's in Dearborn Heights. All people of all ages can participate. You're going to remove and keep debris out of the waterway. And, of course, you should probably wear waders and waterproof stuff, you know, because you're going to have to get into the water, I think, although they might have like long sticks or nets or something that might help out. But that's a wonderful day to help the community. One might ask, though, and this is great. It's great that residents get together to help the waterway, the Ecorse Creek, especially if you live by it. Mm-hmm. I see something in the paper this week, John, that there's 15 homes that the city has gotten some federal money, I think it is, through Debbie Dingell, to buy 15 homes because nobody wants to live there, and you can't buy them. Why? Because they keep flooding. They're in a floodplain right over in Dearborn Heights.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's Ecorse Creek or what creek it is, but they can't do anything with it. So the city has bought them now, and I don't know what they're going to do with the property. I can't imagine, but it's no good to anybody, and the homes will just be demolished, I assume, so that they don't have homeless people in them or something. I understand the idea that helping to clean up things in your community, but I also wonder, can't it be done cheaper and more professionally by your city out of taxes we all pay to the city? I know we have to pay more taxes for that, but I'm just saying, you know, these people are not professionals, but I mean, certainly cleaning up and fixing up around your house and in your neighborhood, but further away than that, I congratulate all those volunteers. Go out there, help out, because your government at this point is not doing it for you.
And most communities around the Earth Day idea have that cleanup in their areas. We have Downriver Cleanup as well, and Grove Seal has their own cleanup.
Mm-hmm. So, John, I'm going to turn it over to you without giving you foreign knowledge here. What do you got?
Well,
from
Jade,
Downriver.
Well, I actually have something
elsewhere
from around here as well. Mm-hmm. Have you spoken any about our Hammond Planetarium show?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Remind people.
Well, yes. Henry Ford College is presenting Nothing Gold Can Stay, a Spring Star Talk at the HFC Hammond Planetarium in room J102. Of the Science Center on the main campus. This program runs at 7:30 p.m. Wednesdays through May 4th and 3 p.m. Saturdays, March 19th, April 2nd, 16th, and 30th. And it's free and open to the public, and our own Susan McGraw narrates this program. And the show will also feature a multimedia presentation about Mars and Saturn. No reservations are necessary, and seating is available on a first-come, first-served basis. Come join us for that. I also...
Also,
Henry Ford, we're having... Henry Ford College is presenting The Diviners, tickets for the Henry Ford College Theater Arts production, which are set. Productions are for April 14th through the 17th, and 21 through the 24th. And these shows are Friday and Saturday nights. Friday and Saturday nights and Sunday afternoons. And it's too late to buy discount tickets, but you can still get tickets at the box office when you show up. And it's also directed by Mary Bremer Beer.
Mm-hmm. That's going to be a great presentation. Drama, folks. Yes. Serious drama. Yep. Very important. If you haven't experienced that in live theater, because it isn't done much. I mean, most people, it's not as popular as it used to be, like 150 years ago, to go to the theater. I mean, they didn't have any competition from TV and radio and the internet and all that. But theater is a very special, very different experience. And you won't forget it when you go to after theater. You won't forget it. It'll be a moving experience. It's like live people play acting in front of you. Imagine. And your response as an audience, too, affects the way they perform.
Oh, definitely.
So don't start talking to your neighbor about your recent text, you know, or something. It's very important. Pay attention and respond appropriately to the program. But also here at Henry Ford College, we have a educational workshop about possible non-traditional health careers for men. Well, everybody thinks of, well, if you're going to go into medical field, probably going to be a nurse. You know, a lot of openings for nurses. But non-traditional means men usually, well, I'm going to be a doctor. Well, that's a big deal, and that's great if you can. But non-traditional health careers are things other than being a doctor. Okay? And so there's going to be a program here. It's free. It's on April 13th, which is a Wednesday, a week from next Wednesday, 7:30 a.m. in the morning to 2 p.m. in the afternoon. But it's free. They give you a little continental breakfast and also a lunch. Yep. And prizes, too. Mm. And drop-ins are welcome, so you don't have to register in advance, but you could if you wanted to. You can contact... let's see, either Cynthia or Brenda in the counseling office, I think it is. You can also go to a course at hfcc.edu. It's called the Imagine the Possibilities, Non-Traditional Health Careers for Men, April 13th. Okay.
And this is where, Jay? Where will it be held?
Right here on campus in Building G.
Building G.
It's a good building. Building G. Health Sciences Education Center is the full name.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, in fact, John has told me he's even thinking of going, so you might meet him in person. look for John Conroy. Is John Conroy here?
Yeah.
The famous WHFR newscaster?
Okay. We'll find him.
Yeah. Some of those careers, I just mentioned them, for men that have people talking about, and some men, too. Talking about their careers in these fields: medical assistant, physical therapy assistant, respiratory therapy, radiography, nursing for men, surgical technology, ophthalmic technician. That has to do with the eyes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Pharmacy technology too. And so our HFC Career Services Officer Chad Austin is going to be there, a great guy. And as I said, admission is free. And come on by if you're interested, men, in these non-traditional health careers. Want to explore them, see if they're right for you. Obviously, we have programs in all of these that you could sign up for here on campus. You don't have to sign up that day, though, of course. But it's really good background to find out and be clear about what your choices could be. Okay.
And we know that it's a pretty good future for a career, because Jay and I have both been on the other end of those services in the past.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, we're going to need health care for quite a long time, because people are living for quite a long time these days, thank goodness. Yeah. I'm happy about that.
Yes.
Let me flip-flop back to the state of Michigan. Usually there's an order organization from big to little or something in our show, but whenever the pages show up in the pile in front of us, that's when we do it. First of all, unfortunately for Governor Snyder, he just got a first prize in a designation by Fortune magazine.
Yeah.
Fortune magazine, the big magazine about business, right? And they had a little story there came out, I think, 2 days ago on Wednesday. The world's 19 most worst. Disappointing leaders. Yeah. They didn't say worst, most disappointing.
Right.
And the number one most disappointing leader this year was Rick Snyder, governor of Michigan. And they have a funny name for each award. In this case, it's the Don't Blame Me, I'm Just the Governor Award. Yeah.
Yeah,
and we know the details. I don't have to go into them. So he got first prize in that terrible list of most disappointing world leaders. This is all in the whole world, too. We're talking about all around the whole world. Okay, so there you go. And number two, just to show you the kind of company he's in, went to the former chairman of Volkswagen, Martin Winterkorn, and that's called the Burned Rubber Prize, talking about tires and that. But it's really, of course, the Dieselgate, as they're calling it now, the scandal of air pollution that Volkswagen covered up for years while they sold their little clean diesels, which is, not true. And so, I mean, if you can better Mr. Winterkorn, who sold all those dirty diesel engines for 2 years worldwide, and you can best him by coming out first in these worst awards for leaders worldwide. That's really special. So congratulations or not to Rick Snyder for getting that award. Now, another story, though, it was in Metro Times this week about the governor, is where he just got a standing ovation. He said, what? What? Who would give him a standing ovation? Well, he signed a bill in short-term aid for the people of Flint, $28 million. That was the legislature vote on that a week or two ago. But where did he sign it to get the standing ovation? Grand Rapids. Because that's where all the Republican business people are that, in fact, are going to be providing some of the short-term aid. In other words, the money will go to them to provide the water and the trucks and the piping and so on. So, it's going to be a great show of Highway 61 today. I can just feel it. I can actually see it. Yes, we have so many CDs that Kitty Love just brought in that we're picking up off the floor. Do you know how slippery CDs are? They've been slippery since 1980. And you would think somebody would have devised a way to get around it. Don't make CDs anymore. Just download them. Because your computer is probably not going to slip out of your hands, right? I do it all the time, Kitty. Don't worry. It's impossible. She has a huge tray that we borrow each week from the cafeteria here at Henry Ford College to help her bring in that pile. And they still fall off the tray because there's so wonderful blues CDs you're going to be listening to during Kitty's show from 2 to 4 this afternoon. And, of course, it's followed by Go With the Flow, Mike Holloway's blues shows from 4 to 6. So a lot of blues for you today. And, you know, most of it's good time blues. It's understanding the problems and issues and, as Mike would say, go with the flow, right? All right. So Governor Snyder actually, even though he got that award from Fortune as the most disappointing leader in the world, he got a standing ovation in Grand Rapids. And it's amazing that he should sign this bill to help Flint in Grand Rapids. But that's where the business people are that are going to make all the profit on this.
Safe haven for him.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yep.
Here's a little Dearborn twist and turns. Very important. I've only got 8 minutes on the show, and John still got some stuff. But okay, Arab American News on the 24th of March ran this very special story, and I didn't get to it before. Attorneys suspect that the city of Dearborn wants to shut down a bar because of black crowds. Okay, a racist sort of thing. And that venue is called Live Lounge, L-I-V, Live Lounge. It's located 21961 Michigan Avenue in West Dearborn. It's one of four bars in the area undergoing a revocation review by the city. And that's because there have been complaints about rowdy, party-going crowds frequenting the business, and it's turned into a nuisance for local residents and other establishments. And but, of course, a few days after there was an incident, Live Lounge got a letter from the city requesting revocation hearing regarding its liquor license. Without a liquor license, you can't run a bar, of course. So that's the way you get rid of a bar, is get its license pulled, right? The city cited numerous police reports and residential complaints. The city also received a complaint to the Liquor Control Commission in Lansing regarding minors being in possession of alcohol at the establishment. At a public meeting on Tuesday, March 22nd, city officials and Louvre Lounge representatives argued about the possibility of revoking the business liquor license. And speaking on behalf of the owner, attorney said the city asked for a revocation hearing without issuing a warning or requesting to meet with the owner in advance. So they went they're going straight for the license. And that, you know, and oh, by the way, on Saturday nights, what happens in the Live Lounge? And you partygoers know what happens there. It's a special radio station event broadcasting live from the bar. Not us, no, but 97.9 WJLB. Okay. So, and also they promoted this week or last week an after party on Thursday night following superstar Rihanna's concert at the Palace. I don't think Rihanna stopped by, but nonetheless, you can sort of tell, you can guess here at the crowds. And it's probably African-American crowds primarily. And could there be a racist reason for this issue? I don't know. But it was right to write the story, just to raise the question in the minds of everybody. Certainly other violations like selling, you know, to minors is a problem. I just want to mention that in the paper this week somewhere, I see that several establishments, and not just bars, are having fights, fist fights, other skirmishes, and there must be like 20 places, 20 restaurants in East and West Dearborn that are having these strange violent moments. And I don't think there's anything in common. It doesn't have anything to do with race or culture. And so why these outbreaks of unruliness? Could it be the presidential candidates? No. Sorry. I have to go to the bad joke at the end. Yeah, because I don't know how else to sum it up. There's no other logical reason for this necessarily. Although I do have a picture, you know, from the Arab American News story of a crowd at the Live Lounge, and they're all black people. Okay, one looks like a white person out of 20 here in the picture. So you don't know. We talked about bias at the beginning, didn't we,
yep,
John? And
yep.
You just don't know if that has anything to do with the city. Again, this is only one of four bars that are under revocation. So there's a lot of trouble with bars. How many bars do we have in Dearborn? Four of them under license revocation procedures? Wow. Pretty wild places. I don't know. Okay. Moving on.
Let me put a plug in for, I know this bar does not under revocation review, and that's Joe's Top Dog. Yeah. Coney Island tonight is continuing with their all jazz series on Friday nights with the Rich Michaels Trio. And tonight's special guest is Ed Gooch, mm-hmm. who's a very fine trombone player.
Trombone and vocals, it says in the flyer. Vocals. Now, the flyer we have does say every Friday from 7 to 10. I think you said 6 to 9 is more like what they're doing these days. But
7 to 10 is pretty accurate.
Okay, but you can, right. You and can the reason we mention it, folks, not a commercial, but they're supporting local artists, and that's a good thing, and it changes every week. And you could theoretically go there, I guess, and sit and not order anything but water, although they'll probably stare at you. But if you're thinking of going out anywhere and having a little food and want to listen to some free music entertainment, this is a possibility. It's the only reason we mention it. Joe's Top Dog on Michigan Avenue in East Dearborn, one block east of Schaefer. Okay.
And we promote each other. They promote our programs and we promote theirs. Yep.
Okay. By the way, at 1:30 today, 25 minutes ago, and I don't know what happened here, but Dearborn Heights District Judge Mark Plowecki, that's a very popular political name in Dearborn Heights area. He's expected to make an announcement. I'm sorry. It says Wednesday afternoon. Oh, this came out Wednesday. Oh, it already happened. Well, we don't know what he said, but it looks like he's trying to toss his hat in the ring for running for Michigan Supreme Court. I think he's a Democrat, though, so that's going to be a tough road to go. But his name is very well known in the West Detroit area for decades, and Plowecki, and that might help in a run for Michigan Supreme Court. And do they have to go through primary first? Depends on how many candidates are there, I guess. I don't know. All right. Lastly, I wanted to turn to an opinion by Craig Ferran, but John, you have anything else? No, okay.
Nope.
We have only a couple minutes here. In the Downriver paper called The News Herald, and you can go and read it for free at their website, thenewsherald.com, the voice of Downriver. Mm-hmm. Did I do that right? Okay. Here's what Craig had to say, and it's sort of an Easter thought from last weekend. He quotes Arthur C. Clarke, the famous science fiction author. He said, "I don't pretend we have all the answers, but the questions are certainly worth thinking about." Ooh, that's our motto for this show, too, in fact. That's certainly true. We don't know the answers. So he says, "I sometimes wonder, maybe a little more every day, because maybe I'm getting a little older every minute, what's to become of our nation, society, the world? We seem to always be on the brink of one catastrophe only moments after cleaning up after another. A president's tenure is challenged from the outset, while current candidates race to the bottom of gutter behavior to win votes. Explosions rock Europe, while our troops continue to trudge through far-off lands." So, and I have to say here as an aside, just, I am so sick and tired now, something like almost 20 years in, of seeing our flag at half-mast at public buildings and institutions. I mean, I'm not very patriotic in the usual sense. I think I'm a creature of the world more and all the people than even a U.S. citizen. Oh, wash your mouth out, Jay. But if I'm patriotic about anything, it's the fact that we're always killing and being killed somewhere in the world, and therefore our American flag has to be at half mast in respect for those that die in service to us. It used to be like it would be half mast maybe once a month or once every couple months when something, an accident would happen somewhere. And now, because of the wars we're involved in on several continents, it's always at half mast. And just think about that. That's a tragic shame. Well, it's the nature of life. Okay, then cut the mast in half and then just keep flying it in the same place, and who will know, right? It'll be at the top of a half mast. Yeah, I know, it's stupid. All right. Well, so what did he do? Okay, very quickly, Craig, and it's time. It's WHFR Dearborn, top of the hour. Craig asked the kids in their family during an Easter ceremony to, and they do this every year, they write out questions, difficult questions about current topics, except in somewhat dumbed down, just slightly dumbed down language for the kids to answer. And so what, and kids would open one of these at random, pull it out of a hat, and then they would give their answer to the problems of the day. So here it is. Okay, here are the answers. When it came to health care, the children in the Ferran family, they made the distinction between health care and health insurance. To their minds, turning the page, care should be universal. All Americans in this richest of nations should have access to health care from birth to death. It's the insurance issue, they said, that has cluttered the debate, created the sideshow. They understood the system and argued for its replacement. They saw the simplicity of Medicare for everyone and the need to pay for it. They also viewed medicine from an altruistic perspective, a noble calling in which doctors heal people because they want to and can. Wow. And in terms of marijuana, what did they have to say? Make it legal, tax it, and use the proceeds to fund health care. What about those incarcerated for possession of marijuana? Let them out for time served, now. What about 11 million so-called illegal immigrants in this country? Kids said, give them a path to citizenship, period. What about a woman president? They said could be the best thing to ever happen to the world.